Hello and welcome to In Studio WBAA, conversation and performance from the WBAA studios at Purdue University. I'm Greg Kostrapa. With me is cellist Juliana Soltis, whose latest album is called Going Off Script, The Ornamented Suites for Cello by J.S. Bach. Welcome to In Studio WBAA.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. Before we talk about you and your instruments, plural, as you brought two of them in today, could you introduce us to the Bach Cello Suites?
Well, the Bach Cello Suites are probably some of the most famous works in classical music. Even if you aren't a fan of classical music, chances are you know the Bach Cello Suites. Complete strangers who see me standing on a street corner waiting for a lift or on a subway platform or in the security check line at the airport, when they see that I've got my cello on my back, they will come up to me and they will sing a piece of music to me, and not realizing that this is Bach. And they'll say, do you play this really pretty piece? And yes, I do play that really pretty piece. It's the prelude from the suite number one, which I believe I'm playing later. It's wonderful to know as a performer that even if people don't know what a piece of music is, that it can still resonate with them in this really deep and lasting way.
We've got the cello suites that people know. Were they conceived of as a set? Were they written at different times in Bach's career?
You know, we actually don't know a whole lot about the timeline of the composition of the suites. We do know that they were written at a period in Bach's life when he was writing mostly secular music. Obviously, with Bach, we think of his wonderful organ works. We think of all of those cantatas. We associate him with religious music. But there was a time when he was working at the court of Prince Leopold von Anhalt-Köthen, who was not Lutheran. And so all of a sudden, Bach is not being asked to write church music. He's being asked to write music essentially just for fun, music that's just for entertainment. And so all of like Bach's chamber works, his wonderful solo works for violin, and the cello suites date from this period. So we kind of can ballpark the cello suites around 1720, though we're not sure if they were written in any one particular order.
Pretty much every cellist has played these. Pretty much every great cellist has recorded them. Yo-Yo Ma just did it for the third time. Do you conceive of these works differently than other cellists?
I do conceive of these works differently than the cellists who have come before me, but I do still feel that my interpretation is very much part of this wonderful recorded legacy of Bach. I think my most treasured recording of the Bach Cello Suites is actually a boxed LP set that somebody gave to me while I was on tour in Japan, and it's the complete Casals recordings on LP. And I recently moved from Seattle to Richmond, Virginia, and I haven't unpacked anything yet, so I'm just crossing my fingers that those records are okay. But my interpretation attempts to turn back the clock and engage with the suites in the way that Bach would have intended. And what that means is that Bach was operating in a musical culture in which improvisation, spontaneously just making music up on the spot, is a huge, huge part of performance practice. And when I say performance practice, that's just a very fancy, I have a bunch of degrees way of saying how we play things. But improvisation is an important part of performance for Bach.
Bach comes from a culture of improvisation. Does that mean that he didn't write down all the notes that he wanted a performer to play in the actual score?
That is an excellent way of putting it. Bach leaves behind spaces in the music for the performer to finish the process of composition in the moment of performance. And without these, his music really is incomplete. If you play Bach's music, from a historical perspective, if you play Bach's music without these little improvised bits, which we call ornamentation, which is why it's the ornamented suites for cello, then essentially what you're giving people is a recipe for music. You're reading the ingredients for the music off the page, but you aren't actually making the music. It's a little like if somebody were to say, oh, I baked you a cake, and then proceed to read you the recipe for cake and Personally, I'd be a little disappointed.
Yeah, not nearly as tasty as the actual cake itself. Well, let's have you perform a little bit right now and kind of give people an idea of what it is that you do and how you think of these things. And we'll start off with that famous prelude from the Cello Suite No. 1 by Johann Sebastian Bach. Cellist Juliana Soltis in studio, WBAA. Lovely, lovely playing by cellist Juliana Soltis of the Cello Suite No. 1 by Johann Sebastian Bach. We heard the first movement, the prelude. We'll hear a couple of additional movements in just a little bit. Juliana, you mentioned a couple of degrees that you have in music, but what inspired you to play the cello in the first place?
I actually grew up in South Charleston, West Virginia, which is a little town probably nobody has ever heard of. But there was a free program available in the public schools where once you reach fourth grade, any kid can take free music lessons, free string playing lessons in the public schools. And it's a partnership between the West Virginia Symphony and the Kanawha County Public Schools, which thankfully continues to this day. And so, you know, you're fourth grade and they assemble you all in the lunchroom slash gym. And they brought in a string quartet. And they had little Christmas light bulbs attached to their music stands, like, you know, the big ones that you used to see and used to burn your hand on. And they played what I now know is the Beethoven String Quartet Opus 18 No. 6. And every time Each person had the theme, first violin, second violin, viola, cello. They had a little foot pedal and they would step on it. And the light on their music stand would light up. This is, oh gosh, when is this? This is 1991. So we were all really, really impressed with this at the age of 9 years. And I toddled home with my permission slip to hand to my mother. And she says, okay, well, if you want to do this, you can play an instrument. What do you want to play? And I don't know why I said it, but I looked her right in the eyes and I said, I want to play the cello. And my poor mother, I think she just blanches because I think she was imagining how long she was going to heft this big, heavy instrument to school for me because I was quite small. I wasn't big enough to carry my own cello, I think, until the sixth grade. And my mother was a flutist. So this was quite a change. And it just started sort of as simply and as beautifully as that.
That's lovely. And then you kept on with it and obviously went on to do great things. Let's get back to the music and a couple of additional movements now from the first suite by Bach, an allemande and a courante. And in Baroque times, these dances, one slow and one fast, tended to be set together, right?
Mm-hmm. They did. It's so interesting. You know, we call these dance suites, and they are dance suites because they're comprised of a prelude. And preludes, when they were originally conceived of in the 17th century, were meant to be improvised. And so I always try to take a very improvisational approach to a prelude to give it that feeling of I'm sitting down at the cello for the first time today, and I'm just kind of working out the kinks, kind of like when you go for that early morning jog and you're like, I'm just going to take it easy for the first mile or so, or five. I like to run myself, and sometimes that first mile or so is more like a walk. The dance movements, then, these are stylized renditions of dances which would have been danced socially during Bach's time. And I love these movements in particular because this is where a lot of that improvisation, a lot of that ornamentation happens.
Okay, well, let's hear these two. And then we'll talk about what's on the page and what you did differently about it after we hear where you go off script, as the title of your album is, with these two stylized dances from the first cello suite by Bach. We'll hear the Allemande and the Courante, played here by cellist Juliana Soltis in studio, WBAA. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Two movements from the Cello Suite No. 1 by Johann Sebastian Bach, the slow Allemande, then the quicker Courante. The cellist was Juliana Soltis. You're listening to In Studio, WBAA. Juliana, let's talk about your cello for a minute, at least the one you've been playing on, because I know you're going to switch to another cello for the sixth suite by Bach. We'll hear a couple of movements from that. And I'm looking at your cello you've been playing on, and it's ornamented just kind of like the Bach you're ornamenting, in a sense, right?
It is. Ornamentation, or rather decoration, on Baroque instruments, stringed instruments in general, was really common for the longest time, and then it fell out of practice during the Romantic era. And I think it's such a shame, because it's just beautiful. Who doesn't want a cello with a little bit of bling on the fingerboard? And my cello, who I call Grace, is an actual, as I say, actual Baroque cello. And what I mean by that is that her label says 1677. So she's quite old, but she would have been around to play Bach's music when it was premiered.
So she predates the Bach cello suite by almost a half a century.
She does.
Let's talk about your bow for a minute. It doesn't look like a traditional cello bow that I see around my house, for sure.
No, bows, like everything else, so we can think about the way things are today as being the way that they have always been. And I often think of Voltaire's Candide, that they keep saying everything is all for the best in the best of all possible worlds. I often think of when discussing the changes that have happened, not just in what we call classical music over the centuries, but what has happened with instruments as well. People who are listening, you can't see me, and you can't see the cello either, so you don't realize that Grace the cello has no end pin. And the end pin is that metal spike that comes out of the bottom of cellos. If you go and hear the Indianapolis Symphony, if you go and hear a string quartet here in town, you will see that cellists have that spike on the end of their instrument to hold it in place while they play. Well, that didn't come into play until well into the 19th century, meaning that even our favorite, my favorite, Dvorak Cello Concerto was actually premiered on a cello with no end pin. And I haven't tried that yet, but I really want to. That's what's going to be next after this tour. But bows have changed a lot, too. And when you look at a modern violin or cello bow, you will see a concave shape, meaning that the stick of the bow, that's the wooden part, that it curves down. Now, Baroque bows, and even, you know, leading up into the classical period a little bit, these bows were convex, meaning that for every young cellist or violinist out there who's told that your bow is tightened too tight and it makes that rounded shape, well, back during the Baroque period, that was actually something you wanted. And it all goes back to the idea that they had a different kind of sound in mind than we do today. As a modern cellist, I focus a lot on creating a big, powerful sound that would get all the way to the back of the hall. You are playing for those cheap seats. Those people paid money to hear me play too. But Baroque instruments, Baroque music, was meant for much smaller, more intimate spaces, probably not a lot bigger than the studio that we're recording in today. And the instruments are meant to be resonant, to fill the space with clouds of atmospheric sound. And they are meant to almost speak to you, to mimic the human voice.
Let me ask you about the tuning. Are you tuning this at the standard concert pitch, or are you playing it lower like you would expect to have in the Baroque era?
You're quite right that I'm playing it lower. I usually choose the standardized A equals 415 hertz when performing Baroque music. I say standardized because Baroque pitch, as we understand it, could have been different from one city to the next. Famously, the Venetians played at a much higher pitch than everybody else. I think they were up somewhere around 466, which is crazy high. And in France, they played at something around 392, which, if you're comparing everything to the modern A equals 440 hertz, that's going to sound a whole step lower.
If you've got perfect pitch, this kind of thing might be a little problematic.
It's definitely problematic. I have perfect pitch. And when I first started exploring the idea of historically informed performance, I had a terrible time. Everything sounded out of tune to me. I would go for a note, I would hear it in my head, and I would play a half step higher than I was supposed to, or I would put my finger in the right place and it would sound a half step lower and I would freak out. It took about a year for my sense of perfect pitch to navigate down, and now I can go back and forth pretty easily.
Let's talk about your other instrument now. You'll be playing a couple of movements from the sixth cello suite by Bach on this instrument. Tell us a little bit about this one. And does this have a name like your other cello does?
This cello does have a name. I have at this point named all of the instruments in my collection, in part just for clarity. When I have to contact my luthier and say, oh, I've got, you know, an open seam, and he wants to know which instrument, it's just easier to be like, oh, you know, Grace has an open seam, and Beater looks like he's got a crack in the table. That's the top part of the instrument. So this is Beater, and Beater is a 5-string violoncello piccolo.
5 strings. Now, wait a minute. So most cellos, if you go to the symphony, like the Lafayette Symphony or the Indianapolis Symphony or a string quartet, you'll see a 4-string cello. 5-string, were those common back in the Baroque era?
5-string cellos were much more common than even scholars had previously realized. This 6th suite is written specifically for a 5-stringed instrument. Bach includes a tiny little note at the beginning of the music, and it says, une violoncelle à 5 cordes. And what that means in French is a cello with 5 strings. And there are a lot of cellists who play this on a 4-stringed instrument instead, because 5-string cellos now are quite rare, and nobody wants to invest, as they say, in one instrument just for one piece. But there is not just this one piece written for 5-string instruments. There was actually a vast repertoire written for these 5-string cellos. A lot of it has unfortunately been lost, but we do still have extant a good portion of this repertoire. And there wasn't just one kind of 5-string cello, which is where things get a little thorny when we say to ourselves, okay, I'm going to get a 5-string instrument and I'm going to play this Bach 6th suite. There were multiple forms of the 5-string cello, including one of my favorites, which is called the violoncello di spalla. And di spalla in Italian means of the shoulder. Now, cellos, of course, are held in between the knees. Baroque cellos in particular are supported fully with the legs because we have no end pin there. And the violoncello di spalla is a tiny cello with 5 strings and then a big leather strap that runs all the way along the back, kind of like you'd see on an electric guitar. And what scholars think is that this strap is then sort of slung around your shoulders and you play this teeny cello on your shoulder like a violin. The theory is that this is so the violinists and violists could play the cello if they really wanted to without having to figure out how to hold it, because, of course, you know, who doesn't want to be a cellist? But then there's also the violoncello piccolo, and I chose to play this 6th suite on the violoncello piccolo, which is basically just a tiny version of a normal cello with the addition of that 5th string. I love the name, though, because violoncello means little bass violin. And you add piccolo on the end of it, and it's suddenly like the little cutie bass violin, like little bass violin. It's just the most adorable name. And I chose the violoncello piccolo because the sound is just extraordinary. It feels to me a little like a cello and a viola da gamba had a weird kind of Frankenbaby. The sound is somewhere in between the two instruments, and I just love the colors that it produces for this 6th suite.
Great. Well, let's hear a couple of movements of that to wrap up this edition of In Studio WBAA. Juliana Soltis is our guest this morning. She'll be performing the Gavotte and Gigue from the 6th suite by Johann Sebastian Bach. Thank you.
Thank you.
Final two movements of the Cello Suite No. 6 by Johann Sebastian Bach on her five-string violoncello piccolo, or what I'm going to dub the itty-bitty cello. That's Juliana Soltis live in the WBAA studios. She's been our guest today on In Studio WBAA. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun for us, too. Juliana will be performing at Monk Space in Los Angeles on Friday, then heading up I-5 to perform in San Francisco the following weekend. You can get the details about her, her new album called Going Off Script, and her upcoming concert performances at her website. That's JulianaSoltisMusic.com. Our broadcast engineer has been Lee Shaw, and you can hear this program again at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Greg Kustrapa. Thanks for joining us for In Studio WBAA.